Welcome to the Manitoba Ag Days podcast, featuring speakers from our 2017 event.
This podcast features Brian Perillet from CanFax, and his talk is called Record Rally, Record Decline. Now what?
Good afternoon, everybody. It's a pleasure to be here, and the tune is always changing, I guess, as you travel and do these market outlooks. It's certainly a lot better than it was a few months ago, but it wasn't nothing like a year or two ago. But through the whole record rally, record decline, it's unfortunate all of the volatility's kind of taken some of the shine off of the market. You know, if I had to come here just even a couple of years ago and talked about $2 calves, feedlots making $200 to $300, you know, that was a pretty good news story. But today, $2 calves isn't quite as exciting as it used to be to talk about. So I'm gonna go over some of the little broader perspective, a couple things on global. Really, we're going to talk about why and what happened, and a lot of that we're going to be driven off the United States market, obviously, and walk through just some of the key factors there, and then talk about what's going on in Canada and some of these market implications and key factors to watch in terms of what some of this volatility means to calf prices. So simply, you know, if we look at the global picture, you know, we've got the three main meats, and I really focus a lot on beef and pork, the red meat sector where the main competition is, and those price relationships ultimately, in the long term, they hold a pretty steady price relationship. They got out to extreme levels in 2014-15 and helped us get to super high prices, but also maybe we're part of the major decline. But we look at that, and we look at the global stage. We always hear about, you know, we're going to have over 9 billion people to feed by 2050. You know, well, they are going to consume more food, need more food, but ultimately, as a beef producer in the beef industry, we need to increase wealth. You know, unfortunately, a lot of the population growth is in poor countries where they can't afford beef, and if that's the case, it really doesn't do much for our beef demand. Looking at the charts, again, as people move into more protein, continue to grow more poultry, more pork, beef just very, very marginal incline, but basically flat if we're to go back to early 2010. So globally, that's the good news story in terms of as people do grow wealth and demand beef, they're looking to import it, whether it be China and Asia. They can grow chicken, they can grow pork, but they want to import beef, and that's where Canada's well positioned. But if we look at the global markets and we hear lots of the excitement about China and all of these other countries that are going to import beef, it's unfortunately it's very incremental changes. Ultimately, you know, these export markets are critical to our success. You know, we've seen, you know, all of the hide values and different values of organ meats and all those kind of things are worth like almost a couple hundred dollars or $150 a head. Things like tongues, you know, they all go to Japan, and that's where they'll pay double, triple the price we could ever get here. And that's where we focus on building global demand and opening new markets. We maybe don't have a lot of steaks in that to send over there, but that's not what they're consuming, and that's not what they're going to pay the premiums for. So that's where the global market really adds value to the industry. But it's not a get-rich-quick scheme. You know, it takes time. It's small changes to get into those markets. And ultimately, as we get a price signal to produce more food, and whether it be canola, wheat, pork, beef, we can always meet that demand in a hurry, you know, and that's part of what's happened in this market in the last year. We've increased meat production much faster than we thought, given the price signals, and then we're back to these old price levels. So that's just a little bit I want to touch on global. As I mentioned, if we look at North America and look at the U.S. specifically in their hog markets, you know, at one point the wholesale price of beef was four times the price of pork there back in 2014, and long-term average is 2.5 times. So it kind of got stretched, and that helped us push beef prices higher, but it's also, again, we're now back to beef a little over 2.5 times. We are still slightly higher priced than pork. Unfortunately, this is the pork futures chart. That's the pork prices. You know, and they had that huge spike in 2014. They had PED virus. You know, they lost, you know, estimates of 8 million piglets, strong exports. You know, their market went through the roof, much like us. And within a year, pork prices were back to 5-year lows. And then as of last fall, pork prices hit 14-year lows. And, you know, part of that was the capacity issue. They weren't even sure they could slaughter and process all of the hogs they had in the United States due to the big, you know, they had a lot more sows around and continued increased productivity. So, again, when we talked about the beef price and pork price as they sank, you know, that definitely was a weight on the beef market. And looking forward, unfortunately for the pork side of things, You know, they've got, they're looking at putting in 3 new big processing plants in the United States. You know, they just look at cranking out more and more hogs. And we're looking at record pork production for potentially 4 or 5 years in a row. You know, we've had 2 or 3 years, and now we're looking at a couple more. So that's been a big adjustment. Again, that's priced into the market. I'm just kind of seeing what has happened. The beef market, similar story, but it's actually as volatile as it's been. It's been a lot more smooth than pork. You know, we had about a 5-year rally. This is, again, the U.S. futures markets. And we'll talk about how the futures markets affect Canada, because they absolutely do. But we got to watch these bigger trends. You know, we had a rising. We kept talking about tighter and tighter beef supplies, and they kept coming or getting pushed off due to drought and other things. And finally, you know, we had the culmination of that in 2014, which is almost 2 years ago. And since then, we've been trending down as we've been looking at more meat coming on the market. As you can see, we've had a pretty good bounce on the bottom piece there. You know, it's come up. You know, we've seen prices rally 20% in the last little while. So, and hence, you know, calf prices, everything else here in Canada is also moving with that. But again, the bigger term trends, you know, is still down, mainly for the fact, you know, hopefully we've found some value points where we are going to, you know, whether we're going to continue to see volatility, maybe some more stability, and maybe go more sideways than having these big increases and decreases. But on the other hand, there still is more downside risk. There's a lot more cattle out in the United States. And if we look at this chart, this is the chart showing, the purple line is showing you the number of cattle in the United States, and the black line on top is beef production. Now, it's rather interesting, as we got shrunk and shrunk the herd in the United States, beef production has stayed relatively flat. You know, we see that decline in 2014. You know, the other decline back in 2003 and 4 was their BSE case. But, you know, we saw the drop off in 2014, saw a huge price increase just due to that little blip in the line. You know, if we look at it today, we're back to where we were 2 to 3 years ago. And again, our prices are similarly back to where they were 2 to 3 years ago. The issue we're going to look at, if we look at beef production and continue to project forward, you know, 2017, another 5% more beef. There's over 2 million more head of cattle in the United States outside of feedlots that still have to get put on feed, produce beef. And if we push this out 2018, 2019, and if we look at some of the carcass weight trends, you know, we're potentially looking at record beef production in the United States in a couple of years. So despite the fact our cow herd, or their cow herds, you know, only a little over 30 million head, we are, again, as an industry, it's a good news story from an efficiency point of view. We produce a lot more beef with less cows, but it does definitely restrain the market. So that's what the market's really had to absorb. And you know, it's maybe done it a little too fast. Ultimately, we never thought we'd see these massive swings in as fast as they did. I don't think anybody called that, but kind of commodity markets have been known to do that in the past as well. The other issue is, if we look at this, the United States, for years, what this chart shows from 1987 through till about 2009, the United States was a net importer of beef. They imported more beef than they exported. You know, then we saw sort of global demand pick up 2010, 11. The U.S. dollar kind of weakened during that time frame. The U.S. became a net exporter. So not only was their herd shrinking, and, you know, previously their beef production was kind of flat, they were exporting more. And that shorted sort of the North American market, and that helped prices. Finally culminated in 2014. But since then, 15, 16, if you think that black chart, we've buffed our beef production, and we've also, or the U.S. has also become a net importer of beef again. And ultimately, again, that's what's made these big swings in beef production, or beef prices, and beef supplies available to consumers. And I think the big thing going forward is, again, back to global demand. It's going to be incremental, but we need to rebuild build market share globally. And I think in the United States, becoming a potential net exporter, you know, can hopefully help maintain the price levels at least here, or help improve price levels despite having more beef coming to market. And the other one is beef consumption. The ultimate number, you know, we really look at is our meat consumption. If we look at the 2016, from 2014 to 2016, we've seen potentially the biggest increase all time of meat supplies per capita. And again, this is per capita. So, you know, we're adjusting for population growth and everything. So in the last 3 years, or from 14 to 17, we've got a lot more meat to put through U.S. consumers. You know, maybe for us, 12 pounds of meat a year may not sound like a lot, but putting that across all 300 and some million, 350 million people in the United States, Unfortunately, that's tough for prices. The good news side of this maybe is one thing we've looked at and talk about volatility, the Canadian dollar today, and I haven't quite seen all the headlines as traveling, but you know the Canadian dollar is down over a cent right now, almost 1.2 cents, so it hit up to 76.5 cents, which seems to be, there should be pretty good resistance at 76.5. I'm kind of bearish the dollar, which has been harder to sell the last little few days, but you know, I think there is potential for some good news on the Canadian dollar side, and what this chart is the United States dollar. And if you see, we're into a new blip. We've hit some new highs really since the election down there. If you look back, the last time the U.S. dollar was this high, the Canadian dollar was 65 cents. Oil prices back then were $35, and we're closer to 50. But again, you know, these factors, I don't see a lot of upside over the dollar. And I'll talk a little bit more about the dollar, about the Canadian dollar. But strength in the U.S. dollar, a weaker Canadian dollar helps our cattle prices. So in summary, U.S., I think I talked, you know, herd expansion, meat supplies, trade balance. The other thing on the cheap grain side is, you know, we've got grain prices at some of the lowest points in several years, especially in the United States in their corn crop. Unfortunately, as we talk about pork production, we look at more pork plants coming on board. Cheap grain actually benefits pork and poultry even more just due to the fact that, you know, they use a lot more intensive grain rations than cattle. Cheap grain, you know, all these other capacity things, we're looking at more meat coming down the line. Leverage, I'll talk a little bit about that. I'll talk about that a little bit more later. And in theory of inelastic demand, that's one that, you know, we talked about, or I'd say in our office talked about, but didn't, you know, maybe put the test to it. But realistically, all inelastic demand says you get a small change in production or a small change in supplies, you usually see a big price response, a big improvement in prices. Ultimately, you know, we've replaced where we're seeing on the other side of that, where we're seeing, you know, smaller moderate changes in beef supplies, and we're seeing a big impact on prices. So it's good when supplies are going down, but when they go up, we get these sharp changes in prices as well. So in talking about Canada, just moving along, you know, again, here's the record rally, record decline. What is kind of interesting, and as I said, disappointing, losing sight of all of the of these price levels, since October low, cattle prices have rallied 20 to 25%. That's huge. You know, it's rare that we'd see that kind of a price rally in 3 months. And it should be exciting news, but reality is we're making up lost ground to some extent. But these prices have picked up quite a lot. You know, when I started at Canfax in 2010, kind of right at the start of the rallies. And when I was there, everybody wanted $2 calves. That was the goal. $2 calves would be exciting and get expansion going. Well, we blew through that and hit $3.30 calves. And then nobody wanted $2 calves anymore. When they hit $2, it kind of, $2 calves wasn't exciting. Then we went to $1.70. And then people, oh, maybe $2 calves aren't so bad. But, you know, we've been through such massive swings that we've lost a little bit of perspective on what price, what's a good price for cattle. And I will stick my neck out here, too. I've been, you know, when we talk about, we see those high-priced calves, and probably a lot of cow-calf producers here, it was great to sell $3-plus calves. But unfortunately, they didn't really do a lot of good for anybody else. Those $3 calves that the feedlots bought ended up losing, you know, big dollars, record dollars. We saw some of the biggest losses since BSE, or even bigger than BSE when they bought those calves. It kind of pushed the supply chain, pushed prices up throughout the entire supply chain, and now we've got to kind of grind back and get consumers back on board and readjust prices again. So it was good to sell them, but it's been a struggle. So we've got to find a better balance on the markets. You know, fed cattle hit up to $2, and, you know, we wanted $2 calves. We had fed cattle at $2. But today in Alberta, you know, fed cattle prices are about $160, which is still big prices. You know, feedlots are making $200 to $300 an animal right now. So again, there is some positive things happening right now. We look in Canada, you know, and the U.S. right now, cattle on feed numbers are lower than a year ago. You know, there's some of the tightest numbers we've actually seen in a long time. So that's supporting our market. But, you know, as I say, going forward over the next couple of years, we've got a lot more cattle to come. Seasonality, if we look at sort of the price, seasonality's been super tough. We've either kind of 2014 was all up, and 15 was up and then down, and 2016 was all down. But we are seeing some returns where, you know, if you look since the middle of last year, cow prices, you know, they saw some peaks in August, hit their lows in the fall, and have been climbing as well. You know, and they start this year at reasonable prices, you know, 90 cents for cull cows, and, you know, they've rallied about 20% as well off of their lows. Hamburger demand and that has been good, and supplies are tighter now than they were. Fed steer prices as well. You know, they hit their lows late summer, early fall, in the red line on the right-hand side there, and, you know, they had a pretty good fourth quarter or end of the year and starting the year strong. Manitoba's been kind of interesting. This chart's kind of a broken chart, but really it's interesting to look at Manitoba calf prices. You know, out west, as we get further into Alberta, you know, they think they set the prices and have all the premium calf prices, but part of 16, you know, Manitoba is well positioned depending on where the markets are. You know, we've seen good strength out of Ontario, you know, and this is basically showing, you know, if you're above zero, your prices are premium to Alberta. You know, cheaper feed costs and just location versus geography, location to markets. Are you going to Ontario? Are you going to Nebraska? You know, sometimes you have freight advantages here. We lost some of that in 2015. You know, the U.S. Interest really dried up in cattle, and, you know, we lost, or Manitoba lost the premium, but, you know, you're still seeing fairly strong calf prices relative to other parts of Canada. The other big one, and we'll talk a little bit more about this, is the Canadian dollar. Touched on the U.S., and what this shows is from 1980, basically, to now, the long-term average of the Canadian dollar is 80 cents. But if you actually look at that chart and that purple line, the 80-cent line, the Canadian dollar spends very little time at 80 cents. It kind of either breaks through it and spends some time below it, or, you know, it'll spend a couple years above it. And again, just in 2015, it broke below 80 cents. And, you know, my feeling is just where the economies stand and looking at, you know, just opportunities-wise, you know, that, you know, hopefully this dollar stays under 80 cents from a cow-calf or from a price perspective. So as I said, with the cattle prices, with all this volatility, it's been, you know, it's been gut-wrenching at times for feedlots who've bought these calves and sitting on inventory. You know, it's one thing to raise calves and sell them at, you know, higher or lower prices, but when you're buying them and trying to feed them and make a profit, you know, they had a really good run through 2014 and first half of 15. But again, as those calf prices peaked and, you know, their losses also peaked or hit their troughs, I guess, within a few months later. And as I said, though, right now at these current prices, you know, feedlots are making money and some pretty good profit margins, and that's helping support calf prices. The cow-calf sector, and we've always kind of said, they've been well-positioned through all of this. You know, we saw those 14, 15. In the 15, the feedlots, they made money in the first half and lost in the second half and were kind of a wash, whereas cow-calf producers still had a pretty good year in 2015. 2016 was when we saw the major adjustment. And I know in last October, you know, depending if you sold in October and some of those lows and depending on your costs, you know, some cow-calf guys said they weren't making any money last year. But again, if you, unfortunate, just when the timing was as such. But overall, in general, cow-calf producers still had a bit of profit, kind of an average year. But again, nothing like the big profits of the previous two. I mentioned leverage in the first slide. And if we talk about leverage, and this is one that kind of raises hair on your neck from a producer's point of view. But what this is showing, so if you look at the red line, it kind of peaked there in early 2015. And that's just showing the year-over-year change. So from 2015 to 2014, calf prices, that red line, had increased 80%. They were 80% higher than they were 1 year ago. You know, the blue line, fed cattle, were about 40% higher than the previous year. And retail prices were about 20% higher. So, you know, the cattle have a much larger swing. That's, well, you know, not a surprise. Cattle prices swung dramatically. Obviously, when their prices went up significantly and retail prices went up slowly, the retailers' margins got squeezed. But now on the other side of that, if we look at, you know, the most recent at the far right of the chart, you know, cattle prices now 40% lower than a year ago. Calf prices are, fed prices 20%, and retail prices are somewhat flat. So again, they didn't swing up nearly as much as cattle, but they've been very slow to come down, and it's been a bit of a drag on the market for sure in terms of consumers aren't seeing or haven't seen yet, or are just starting to see these changes in prices. This retail data just takes averages. We are seeing beef featured a lot more. We are seeing, you know, on the front pages of flyers. That's where we do move a lot of beef, whether it's, you know, hamburger on sale or middle meats, you know, rib on sale or roasts. That is where we get the meat flowing, get the price signals to consumers. They consume more. Demand for beef has still been strong. So as they pull more beef off the shelves, that'll pull more cattle forward. And we are starting to see that. But it took a year, unfortunately, where, you know, the retailers, they got squeezed in 14 and part of 15, but they've spent a year and a half kind of making their margins back or improving their margins. Hopefully we can find a little bit of a better value point for beef versus pork. So what's this all mean in terms of Canada? We've seen these ups and downs. We've seen the U.S. is into, you know, I didn't say that, but their cow numbers grew much, much faster than we anticipated. You know, there was a lot of things going on. You know, demographics, we talk about the older producers and they're not going to expand. Well, the U.S. had one of their fastest expansions in the last 40 years. So again, it puts a lot, it's a lot faster than anticipated. Canada's been nothing, really. Very, very flat the last 2 to 3 years. You know, we still went off those major 2005 highs post-BSE, and we've done nothing really but shrink and maybe stabilize here. So we're not seeing more calves around or more cows around in Canada. Just hasn't been an appetite. And that said, you know, a lot of producers took those $3 calves, sold them and took the money and pocketed it. And looking back now, that was actually, you know, that worked out quite well versus having the expense of breeding stock. So maybe at these price levels we are hearing, guys, you know, and even last year some heifers did get exposed. But overall, you know, this is the heifer numbers. The last was, you know, Canadian beef cow numbers, Manitoba. All the provinces follow a very similar trend. This is showing you our number of beef breeding heifers we have on July 1st. And again, we see a slight little uptick in 2016. We actually saw cow marketings higher in 2016. So really, you know, we're only keeping enough heifers to replace the cows. We're not growing the herd. We've got a little over 600,000 breeding heifers. You know, the big expansion years, we had 800,000-900,000. So we're way short of getting into any expansion mode in Canada. So again, for producers, it's not all bad because, you know, the guys who have the calves are the ones that get paid if there are less of them around or not as big expansion. Kind of combining a few ideas I've talked about in terms of growing meat production off of less cattle. You know, this is carcass weights. And I don't know if people have realized how big feedlots are growing their cattle. That red, you know, those are the weeks of the year, 1 to 51. And so at the start, the first 16 weeks, first 4 months of last year, the average steer in Western Canada averaged about 920 pounds. That's the average steer carcass weight. So those are huge, huge animals. You know, we've got lots that are pushing, you know, well over 1,000, 1,100 pounds. So we are putting a lot more beef onto the market with less cattle. Last year, slaughter was up 7% and beef production was up 10% in Canada. So we've seen the price swings, you know, U.S. changed 5%. We actually increased beef production in Canada 10%. So the good news story, though, as I said, we kind of got lagging as we are seeing cattle being pulled forward. This week, you know, our steer carcass weights are now 33 pounds lighter than a year ago. So we are getting more current, and that helps take some of the beef off of the market. But you still take 33 pounds off a year ago's weights. They're still near, they're by far the second biggest we've ever seen. So we are producing that extra tonnage. And it's also important to remember that a lot of that is, it's lower quality, cheaper, fatty trim. It's not high value beef. So if you're adding, you know, 5% more beef to these cattle, you're adding 5% very low stuff. So that drags kind of the average prices down too when you're adding a lot of that fatty trim. And that market's been under a lot of pressure. So if you think about it, we haven't really expanded yet. I'm saying here we've increased beef production 10%. How do we do that? And ultimately, it's about exports. You know, we export between 800,000 and 1.2 million head of cattle a year. And again, when I talk about beef production, I do include the fed cattle we export. But the reason we kill more is we just didn't export any feeder cattle. So as tough as these markets have been, and it's, you know, quite surprising. Our feeder prices have been every bit as strong as the U.S., and in sometimes we were importing feeders last fall out of the U.S. So, again, our prices were under pressure, but they weren't actually under as much pressure as the U.S., even adjusting for the dollar. So even if our dollar was 75 cents, we could go down to the U.S. and buy calves down there cheaper. So they've seen some massive, massive price swings. And these, by keeping the exports in Canada or not exporting the feeder cattle, you know, we've fed them out and we've got more fed cattle around. So, you know, that's how we do balance things with our numbers. So it is actually some other good news on these. We look at these markets today. As I said, feeder cattle prices, we were importing feeder cattle. Kind of a choppy chart. But if you look at that black line, usually Canada's a discount to the U.S. market. So our prices, you know, they set the price. We adjust for the dollar, and roughly we're back transportation, $10 a hundredweight. So that black line overall would average about 10. Last year, for much of the year, our prices, again, our fed cattle prices were premium to the United States. So despite, again, our price issues we had here, you know, our fed cattle have been extremely strong. So that has kept some more, whether you realize it or not, you know, indirectly, it has kept more money. And that red dot, again, we're starting this year, our cattle are worth more than the United States fat cattle. So very, very rare, and hasn't had a year where we spent that much time premium to the U.S. So that is a good news story. The weak Canadian dollar, part of that is, you know, if you look at the packers, you know, if they've got packing plants on both the U.S. and in the U.S. and in Canada, which they both do, when our dollar is 75 cents, and they look at their labor costs, really, they're comparing the two. They're paying 75 cents on the dollar in Canada. So they can maybe pay a little more for cattle because they are having some labor savings. And what that has all meant, I think one of the concerns we've seen in Canada the last, you know, previous in 13, 14, as our cattle numbers dropped, and in 14 we exported all sorts of feeder cattle. That red line is showing the number. That's the slaughter capacity in Canada. So you can see post-BSC, we built plants and increase the capacity, and all of them ended up closing, and then we've even closed to more, you know, Moose Jaw, Calgary had a plant, there's a plant in Quebec all closed there in 2010 to 2012. But we kill about 60, or can kill about 63,000 head of cattle a week in Canada. And if you look at the blue line there, again, last fall, we actually peaked, and pretty much the plants, they have to run full out, run 6 days a week, and they were to kill, process all of the cattle we had in Canada. So one, you know, they were making money, obviously. They had some pretty good margins in there, but the cattle were here, so producers had to move them. But despite that, they were still paying a premium to the U.S. So that was supportive. You know, and what I was going to say back in 14, the concern is, you know, could we lose another plant? If we don't keep cattle around, that was ultimately the concern. And, you know, I think we've sort of balanced that market. Hopefully they can sustain themselves. And to the point now in Alberta, there's a beef plant, Harmony Beef, that used to be a rancher's beef plant that opened after BSE. They've been working on that plant for about 2 years, but they are pretty adamant they will be starting to process cattle at the end of February of this year. So we'll actually be adding to that capacity. We'll have our first new, well, not a new, but reopening of an old plant that we've seen in a long time. So that plant kills 800 head a day on a single shift. So that's pretty exciting for the industry to actually have a new packing plant open here. So that's where we got to be competitive in terms of our pricing. And one of the things that keeps cattle in Canada is ultimately feed costs. You know, I often hear, oh, the weak Canadian dollar, all the cattle go south, and it's actually very much the opposite. We will finish them here. We may send more fed cattle south, but a low dollar actually often keeps the Canadian or cattle in Canada longer. Partly the plants can be more competitive with the United States, and as well, the fed cattle prices just go up. So feedlots can sell fed cattle for that much more. And on top of that, chart has a lot going on, but that red line is corn prices, and you can see through 2015, 2016, corn was cheaper than barley, especially in Western Canada or in Alberta. And this chart doesn't quite show, but right now we are seeing a bit of feed cost advantage, and it's more so related to, you know, all of the wheat with mycotoxins and the fusarium issues that a lot of wheat is going into feedlot rations in Alberta, and we've actually can feed cattle cheaper in Canada. So that's keeping the capacity going. You know, I'm sure the people have heard, or, you know, Western feedlots announced their closure last fall, you know, 100,000 head feedlots on three sites. Now, one hadn't been operating for a couple of years, but still, you know, those 80,000 head that they took off are coming out, they're finishing those cattle but not placing anymore. Hasn't really impacted the market too much, partly because, again, there's been excess capacity. We've shrunk cow numbers. You know, somebody had to go out. We just did not, you know, expect maybe one of the largest to be the one that goes out. But it may get sold or rebought and come back on. But right now it hasn't. We have had enough capacity to feed all the cattle in Canada, despite that closure. So what am I doing for time? So where to from here? Ultimately, you know, I started with the cattle futures and U.S. prices. You can always sort of get the trends. You can look at the U.S. price, you know, adjust for the dollar, and you can get pretty close to what cattle prices are going to be in Canada. Again, we've been a little bit better than expected, and let's say that kind of in carefully that they've been better than expected, but relative to the U.S., they've been higher than we expected. So we look at the U.S. prices, and you know, the old lows or the old high, they go into sort of some trends, and the old highs become the lows, and we saw that shift in 2004 there, and then we went through that in 2012. We've come back all the way down to those prices. Maybe it wasn't fully expected, but ultimately, you know, we even saw U.S. Fed prices under $1 a pound, and you know, there could be, as I said, more downside risk as some of those prices have dropped below $1 their last fall as we work through the cycle over the next couple of years. But we keep those price levels in mind, sort of the dollar a pound, and last fall the futures hit lows of 89 cents, sort of the mid-80s. You know, that's the next talk of the potential lows of the whole marketplace is if Fed cattle in the United States go all the way back to 85 cents. But keeping those in mind, and if we use an $8 basis, you know, we assume we're going to go back to, you know, maybe it won't go all the way to eight, but let's just assume the long-term average of a discount to the U.S. Feedlots cost, again, 85 cents or 80 cents, but I used 85, maybe conservative. But ultimately, when you sell a calf, you take it to the market, you know, the guy who's buying it, or the feedlots in there in Alberta, if they're going to buy a calf, they're going to say, well, I'm going to buy a calf in October, and I think he's going to be finished in August. So they can either go and get a look at what the packers will contract the cattle for, go look at the futures and figure out, well, if the futures are here and the Canadian dollar is this, you know, I think I can sell that calf for X dollars into the future. If I figure out what it's going to cost to feed them from today till then, I can figure out how much I'm going to pay for that calf today. So again, they go look at the future of what they think they'll sell that Fed cattle for and work it back. So again, if the U.S. Fed price or the U.S. futures are at $1 a pound, and the Canadian dollar is at 72 cents, you know, we are looking at about calf prices around $2 a pound. You know, for a lot of the fall we were talking, or I mean last year we were thinking $2 calves, and we were kind of right, but also kind of wrong when it got, you know, a little carried away at times. But on the other hand, if you take that same U.S. Fed price, $1 a pound, and if the Canadian dollar is 82 cents, hold everything else the exact same, but just change $1 from 72 cents to 82 cents, that brings our expected calf prices down to $1.59. So the dollar is a huge, huge factor. As I said, you know, the futures have priced in an 89 cent kind of low for Fed cattle next year. Again, may or may not be the case, but the futures, if that's all the feedlots have to use for risk or risk management, they think the Fed cattle price is going to be 89 cents in the U.S. A 72 cent dollar, they can pay $1.63. And here's kind of the scary scenario of, you know, if the U.S. Fed price was at 89 cents and the Canadian dollar is 82 cents, you know, that puts our calf prices at $1.25. So sort of that's the reality check. Don't shoot the messenger. This is just the math. But again, those are sort of some of the risks to the market. Just understand, if the dollar stays under 80, it's not so bad. But again, as I said last fall, when, you know, U.S. guys were selling their calves that low, heifers, you know, just over $1 a pound, you can go into Washington, feedlots were going down there and buying the cattle at those kind of prices. So it's not out of the realm. We just got to realize what the dollar changes and impact are. And that all said, I guess we're just backtracking a little bit on the U.S. side. Hopefully or reality is, you know, their expansion, they've been through one of the biggest in a long time, but it's definitely a lot slower than it was. So when I ran this original scenario a while ago, you know, the U.S. futures were 91 cents. Futures can change $1 to $3 every day. Well, they can change $0 to $3 every day, and most times it's a dollar or so. So the futures are constantly changing. Like I said, when I started, the Canadian dollar tier is down a cent today. When I ran the scenario, 91 U.S. futures price of 76 cent dollar gave us about $1.53 scenarios. So just to put all the rule of thumb together, if you know, I highly recommend people sort of watch the futures and just kind of look what they're doing, because they will impact your calf prices. Off of this scenario, or if you take the bottom scenario, 91 cent Fed price and a $76 calf price, should have been $1.53. If you take live cattle futures, every time the futures moves $1, your calf price should reflect about a 3 cent change per pound, 3 cents a pound. Now, it doesn't happen instantly, but if futures start to trend higher like they have been over the last couple months, you know, every time they add a dollar, you know, you can add about 3 cents to calves. Canadian dollar, if it goes down a cent, so like I said today, it's down over a cent. If it goes down 1 cent, calf prices, holding everything else constant, can go up about 4 cents. That's a pretty dramatic change for just a 1 cent change in the loonie. And as you saw how much that loonie affected it. So since I ran that scenario, the 91 cent Fed price and a $76 to $1.53. Today the live cattle futures have gone about 10 bucks, 10. So they've gone from $91 a hundred weight to 101, might even be 102 now. So they've gone up. So that change alone should add about at 3 cents or 3.2 cents a hundred weight, that should add about 32 cents. A $10 jump in the futures would add about 32 cents to calves. The Canadian dollar is about half a cent lower, or a cent lower than when I ran that scenario. So that would add 4 more cents. Higher futures, lower dollar, great, perfect scenario. So those two factors since the October low would add about, you know, 36 cents. And if you actually look at the few, our low calf price in October was $1.68. Now we're back over 202, or about 35 cents higher, you know, and that's what drives it. So that's why I say it's so important to watch these futures. We may not like it's a bunch of guys we think trading paper in Chicago, but they are definitely, they do have a big impact on your calf prices, and it is a direct reflection whether we like it or not. As the basis changes, talked a lot about basis and how strong it's been. You know, it's been positive versus being negative. Every time it changes a dollar, that adds 2.5 cents to calf prices. So when I say our basis is $5 stronger than normal, you know, you can add 12 cents to your calves for a strong basis. So again, there was times we were at a $20 discount and we were wondering why the markets are in a slump. It's a big driver. And barley prices, I said grain prices quite cheap. Every time I look at it, about 50, if grain prices drop or barley or feed grains drop, about 50 cents a bushel, that helps calf price about 10 cents a pound. So again, last fall, when everything was really down in the dumps, so was grain, fortunately. It had dropped almost a dollar. And, you know, that dollar change in barley prices helped calf prices 20 cents. Now, calf prices continued to go down, but if it hadn't been for grain, it would have been even worse. On the productivity side, it's sort of interesting to track some of these. You know, as I show carcass weights, cattle are getting bigger and bigger. And if you had the same calves, you had two steers that looked, they could look exactly the same. But one's going to grow up, you know, they're both 550 pounds. One's going to grow to 1,500 pounds and be finished at that weight and be done. Where the next one, he can grow a little longer, has a little more growth potential. He can go to 1,550 pounds under the same feeding conditions. A calf that can put on 50 more pounds is worth 2.5 cents a pound more than the other one that finishes earlier. If that one can convert feed better, feed conversion is the ultimate thing in the feeding sector. You know, how many pounds of feed you have to put in front of it to gain a pound? And if you have a calf that, you know, it takes 6.8 and the other steer takes, you know, 5% less, you know, what's that, 6.4, let's say. The calf that can convert 5% better takes, you know, just that quarter of a pound less or whatever feed to gain a pound. He's worth 4 cents a pound more, that calf. And if you have healthy calves, death loss, we talked about health earlier, and you know, if you've got healthy calves that don't die, and you know, as you healthier calves convert better as well, but even just the death loss. So if your calves have a 1% death loss and the feedlot, let's say, has a 2% death loss, you know, a group of calves with a 1% better death loss are worth 3 cents a pound more. So you could have two steers that look identical, really, to the eye, and unless you have the data or background to support it, you don't know. But those two calves could look identical, but on those three factors, there's 10 cents a pound. Just like that. So, and that's another big argument, why are heifers at such a discount to steers? You know, big one is outweights. So you can finish steers so much bigger. If you can put an extra 100, 150 pounds on a steer, you know, there's 7.5 cents, never mind all the feed conversion issues or death loss and health costs. All of those reasons are why heifers, you know, are back. And maybe we've seen that spread widen. It's a common question, and really a lot of that is due to the fact that they're growing the cattle so much bigger, they can get more out of the steers, so they're willing to pay even more now for steers relative to heifers. So that's kind of that summary. Just about done, just wrap up. Little thing on trade, I guess, you know, there's always, again, the export markets. We export almost 45% of our beef. You know, it's interesting or frustrating. You know, BSE was in May 2003. We're still opening borders or getting over issues related to BSE. This October, you know, the Mexico opened up to over 30 month of age beef. They did not take it out of Canada prior to that. So, and that's all related to BSE. So that does give us, we used to ship a fair bit of cow beef, white fat beef to Mexico. The market's changed so much, I'm not sure how much is going or we have to redevelop that. But again, we're still opening new, China's another issue with bone-in beef due to BSE. So we're still dealing with that. EU trade deal, you know, it's still working through some of the hurdles in terms of some of the technical issues around types of wash we can use on cattle and other feeding programs. You know, we have better access to the EU, but it's still, we cannot use growth promotants to get it in there. So it's not like it's a wide open market. It's a very select market. And you cannot, if you actually want to go into the EU, you have to be EU certified even at the farm level. If you can't just bring calves to town and say, oh, they're not implanted, you know, they're EU eligible. That's not actually valid. You'd have to be EU certified on your farm. So there'd be some paperwork to do that way. So it's going to take some time to get the benefits there, but they are have definitely some of the highest beef prices in the world. TPP, you know, that the Trans-Pacific Partnership with Asia and the U.S. and, you know, Japan's the main one there, but I think Donald Trump's been, that's one he's been holding on to that he doesn't really like, so not sure that can work. But Australia has an import. We pay, I think, something like 30% tariff on Japan. Japan on the next, they're our third biggest export market, and for all the beef we ship there, 30% of that cost that they pay actually is in a tariff to them. So we don't even see all of the dollars they're paying us. So there's a lot of opportunity in Japan if we could lower those tariffs. And Australia already has an advantage. So that's why TPP was a big one for us. But you look at our big five biggest U.S., still the bulk of our beef goes to the United States. Hong Kong, Macau, and China have stepped up from literally not even being on the charts 5 years ago to being our second biggest customer of beef. So we are seeing the impacts and growth there. Their imports have grown phenomenally. Japan's third, as I said. Mexico used to be a solid second biggest, and they're now down to fourth. They've been working on their beef industry and their slaughter plants and modernizing themselves to be more competitive. And then South Korea's come on really strong this year, too, as to be number five. So it's promising there, and a lot of that product is either lower quality or stuff we can sell at a big premium. Interesting, we do import a lot of beef into Canada. About 20% of the beef consumed in Canada is imported. Might seem crazy, but reality is in Western Canada, we've got about 75-80% of the beef production, yet most of the people live in the east, right? So and they have the other portion of beef. And Alberta is a lot closer to California and even parts of Mexico than it is to Toronto and Montreal. So it's just a geography thing for the most part. But we still do import quite a bit of beef. And some of it's Australia, too, leaner beef that we blend with. Again, all this fatty trim we have off these fed animals, we can import and then blend them together to make a higher valued or a better valued hamburger out of that 50% trim. Renegotiate NAFTA, not so sure. You know, that's kind of cooled off. That's all relating to Trump and whether he's for it or not. I know his big vendetta is against Mexico. You know, if that's really the case, maybe even with Canada, if NAFTA was to get opened up, there's opportunities there. And Canada still has a Canada-U.S. Free Trade Agreement, CUSTA, which, you know, could be the next where we fall back on. And under that agreement, we still have very low tariffs on cattle and beef. So hopefully it would be Mexico that would be hurt by NAFTA open up. On the cattle side, there's all other issues. And reintroducing COOL, that was originally in one of memos from Trump's team, but I think that's been removed for the most part. I was also going to say some of the wording's sort of taken a bit of they've softened the tone. NAFTA, it's now we're going to review and see the economic impacts or, you know, the impact on the economy of NAFTA. And for the most part, you know, we're pretty confident it's been positive for everybody. So hopefully some of that rhetoric cools down. I think I'm just about out of time. And this pretty much, we've talked about all of this. You know, we've got to be cautious. We are seeing a good uptick. We're seeing tighter cattle supplies right now in the next into the first part of 2017. We know there's more cattle coming down the line and more pork and poultry. So very cautious, and we're getting a bounce. Hopefully we maybe aren't going to see the big price swings, but we're still seeing quite a bit of volatility. We're just seeing volatility right now that we like as it's gone up. Nothing to say it can't go back down to where it was. You know, profitability, and we got to export beef. I will give two little plugs. We do have a Canfax app on iPhones. It kind of gives a price projection. It's more of a guide. It's not always exact because basis and so many things change. But you could see, basically, you know, if the Canadian dollar and the futures change, how much do calf prices change? And you can also get price insurance tables off of the app, too. So just that. And The other one is CANFAX. We are a membership-driven organization. We're a division of the Canadian Cattlemen's, but we don't get check-off dollars or government funding. We survive and fund ourselves off memberships. And, you know, we produce a weekly report every Friday afternoon. We summarize what's going on in the feeder, fed market, cow market. So if you're looking for more information, it's $150 a year for a starting thing for cow-calf producers. So a lot of info, as well as a lot of these charts are online. So you can get all that with your membership.
Thanks for listening. We'll see you at Manitoba Ag Days 2018 from January 16th to 18th.